ShopPC.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Just a note, we ended our fund drive yesterday, but we're still a little bit short. So we're hoping that if you missed the 7-day fund drive that ended yesterday at 9 a.m., that you'll make a contribution to help us stay on the air and keep these great programs on 88.5 FM. Best way to make a contribution today is go to our website, go to WMNF.org. We still have a lot of terrific thank you gifts. Well, there's a renewed effort in Hillsborough County to focus on early learning, as we find that students in Hillsborough schools have some of the lowest reading scores in the state. More on that in just a moment. First, one listener comment about yesterday's interview about the new book that looks at the ongoing mystery of who killed Sweden's Prime Minister Olof Palme in 1986, an assassination that remains unsolved to this day. Here's what one listener had to say.
Thank you for Wednesday's show about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister and Stig Larsson, the author who looked into it. Some brief points here. The original foreign versions of the three Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movies are the ones to watch. There was an Americanized version, and it was way watered down. Number two, the female protagonist heroine of the series of books is a role model for all women, especially women who have been abused. There's an incredible revenge scene in the movie, which a lot of women cheer on. Another thing is that Larsson's death was under very mysterious circumstances, and many believe it's because he was investigating Nazism as it persisted in Europe, and you can see that in the movies. Thank you again for covering that topic.
Well, that was a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. We're going to hook up with our guest in just a moment, and we'll talk about early learning and the importance of early learning. You're listening to 88.5 FM. we're still having a little bit of difficulty reaching our guest, but we hope to be able to talk with him in just a moment about the importance of early learning. And you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Music from Oliver Mitsukudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. In the last few years, there's been growing evidence that many young people who enter kindergarten are not prepared. Earlier this year, the American Academy of Pediatrics published a study that said that too many U.S. children start kindergarten without adequate social, emotional, and behavioral skills critical to school success. Concerns about kindergarten readiness are not new. Preparing children for school was central to the purpose of Head Start. Its founding in 1965, and the first aim of the Goals 2000 Educate America Act that was that all children in America will start school ready to learn. One of the leading experts in the country on early childhood learning joins us now. He's George Halverson. He's chair and CEO of the Institute for Intergroup Understanding. He's served for more than 30 years as CEO of six different health care delivery and financing organizations in the U.S. Currently, Halverson is chair of the First Five Commission for Children and Families for the state of California. He's the author of the book, Three Key Years, and he'll be speaking in Tampa next Thursday at noon. And George Halverson, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
It's great to be on your show. Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So how important is it that why should we even be thinking about kids being ready for kindergarten? How important is that? Don't they learn after kindergarten?
You know, we have not closed the learning gap in our schools in 30 years. There have been massive learning gaps between groups, and we haven't closed them for 30 years, even though people have tried really hard to do good things to close them. And the reason that we haven't closed them is you cannot close them at 15 years. You have to close them at 15 months because the brain development in children happens in the first couple years of life, and that's when all the neurons connect. And those efforts to Head Start were wonderful, but they started at age four. And the biological truth is that the brain changes at four, and it purges the neurons that aren't used at four. So you actually have to build the neuron connections in the years before that, one, two, and three. And the children who get the neuron connections done the first couple of years do extremely well. But the children who do not have the connections made until four never catch up. And there have been really well-meaning people. We can do really good things and should never abandon any child. And we should help children as much as we can in every way we can after four. But the real opportunity to end the learning gaps and to have kids ready to learn happen literally in the first and second year of life. And we actually have research now showing in the first 100 days of life that there are such important epigenetic interactions that happen that the kids who are behind at 100 days have a harder time catching up.
So are you saying that most of our brains develop by the age of three, that most of the neuron connections and the function of the brain, the potential function of the brain is developed by the age of three, not after the age of three?
Yes, major brain development that's really important for lifetime growth happens before, in the first 3 years of life. And then at four, the brain changes and it purges itself. And there are neuron connections that are made after that. And we become wiser. We become nicer people. There's all kinds of really important neurological, psychological things that happen. But the opportunity to really end the learning gaps, that section of the brain needs stimulation in the first 3 years of life.
Now, has this been studied? Have scientists looked at this and maybe tracked kids to see if they don't have this neuron development by the age of three, that there are bad things that happen later on?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a really quick example. When you look at American prisons, we have more people in prison than any country in the world by a wide margin. If you are in this country, you're an African-American male, and you dropped out of high school in your 30s, 60% are in jail today, and 80% will be in jail. So when you look at African-American males who graduated, 10% of the graduates are in jail, 60% of the dropouts are in jail, and we know with 80% accuracy at age three who's going to drop out. So we actually know because the dropouts are the kids who can't read. And the same thing is true in other countries. In Scotland, 80% of the kids and the people in jail can't read. If you can't read, you go down a different path with your life. Things are harder, jobs are harder, health issues are a much higher rate of teen pregnancy. There's a much higher rate of criminal behavior, but literally go to jail. So 60% of the African-American males who dropped out of high school who were in their 30s are in jail, and only 10% of the grads. So we need people to grad and to graduate, and to graduate, they need help in those first years.
And that's why you're coming to Tampa to speak next Thursday, because here in Hillsborough County, where Tampa is, we have some of the lowest reading scores in the entire state, and you're trying to help the movement here to try to increase that. So what are the techniques? What can moms and dads do for their baby, or even before the baby is born? What can moms and dads do to increase those neural connections?
Well, the beautiful, beautiful thing is that just talking to the baby alone, direct interaction with the baby, direct feedback interaction where the baby talks, coos, you respond, literally builds neurons by the billions. Just talking. Talking is stunningly important. And a lot of parents have been told not to talk to their kids.
Wait a minute. Who's been told, really? Have parents been told not to talk to their kids?
There are entire belief systems that you should not talk to your kids early in life. It's intrusive, leave them alone. There's a bunch of belief systems about that. And you said earlier that education begins at kindergarten. A lot of people believe that and say you shouldn't read to the kids until kindergarten. And so they're in medical science, I actually used to teach that incorrectly. So I'm not blaming the parents. Medical science actually got that wrong. But now medical science, the Center for the Developing Child at Harvard, the Stanford people, the Columbia people, all know that those first couple of months are stunningly important, and the first couple of years are really important. And so we now have better science, but we haven't gotten that to the parents. And that's the beautiful thing happening now in Tampa, is that there is going to be a community effort to get that information to every family, to every educator, and to every parent. And when that happens, talking has a huge difference. And then reading is absolutely wonderful to the kids. Reading books to kids from the very beginning, it creates a bonding with the parents. Kids love it. There's a loving interaction. Gives the parents a positive thing to do. But that also builds neurons by the billions. So if you talk to your kid and sing to your, read to your kid, that's really wonderful. And then it turns out that singing to the kids and doing music at that stage is also good if you do it with an adult part of the process. The talking, reading, singing to kids, and that's what we're going to be talking about. We want all of the parents to start with that immediately at birth.
Our guest is George Halverson, and his book is Three Key Years, Talk, Read, Play, Sing, to Support and Help Every Child in America. He's coming to Tampa. He'll be speaking next Thursday at noon at the University Club. George, I remember in the 70s and 80s, it became a thing for parents to play music for their kids while the mom was still pregnant, during the maybe the 5th month or 6 month or 7th month of pregnancy, people would put on Beethoven or some of their favorite music.
Right.
And the thinking was, well, this is going to make my kids smart. Is that true? Does it make your kids smart?
It does. Actually, there's really good evidence that it makes your kids more musically adept. Your kids are more likely to have good musical skills if they have heard that music from even before birth. And there have been some good studies showing that kids at a couple hours old react differently to different music and to different languages than the ones they heard in utero. So we know from that research, University of Seattle has done some great work, we know that the kids actually are listening and benefiting from it. But early music is a very powerful thing to do for kids. And talking to kids immediately is part of the package, but singing is also good.
Does it matter what you say to the kids or how you say it when they're just born or they're a month old? A lot of us who are parents used to talk baby talk to our kids. Does it matter what you say?
And baby talk is wonderful, but also I know some parents who've had huge success with kids who actually, when the kids are a month, 2 months old, are reading the Wall Street Journal to them. And then literally holding them in their lap, and it's the kids getting the exposure to the words, but also the really important thing is the Harvard calls it serve and return. It's when the kid reacts in some way, and then the parent returns that with an action, and then there's a volley. So when there's a reaction, counter-reaction, reaction, that has immense power. People at Seattle have done brain scans, and they show that when that kind of interaction happens, the brains of the kids just light up. They just really, really benefit from a serve and return. And they're also emotionally more secure because they think the world is on their side. And there's a small number of kids who end up with presumptive negativity. We are epigenetically wired so that if we're born in the first few months, we think the world is a hostile, negative place, then our brains defensively organize into presumptive negativity. And that happens often enough that we actually suspended more kids in this country from kindergarten this year than we suspended from high school for behavior. Because well, those kids come to school with a presumptive negativity. They think the world is against them. They're angry. They're unhappy. And the teachers all love kids, or they wouldn't be teaching kindergarten. I mean, they're not there because they don't like kids. And when you've got children who are angry enough that they're attacking the kids and the teachers of the kids in a way that causes them to be suspended, what we know is that we've got to go upstream and help all the kids in those first couple months end up with presumptive positivity, have them believe the world's a positive place. in doing that is almost magical. It has a totally different impact.
Hmm. So does it have to do with the tone that the kids hear when they hear adults talking, that if they hear a negative tone, that they think the world is a angry or dangerous place? Or
Yes, well said, exactly. That is true. The kids are extremely sensitive to even emotional nuances. They need to hear positive reaction. It's a lovely, positive, affirmative interaction that is really good. And what you don't want is the really negative thing, because then they believe it's a hostile world. So not being critical of tiny children is better, and being really affirmative is better, and soft, loving terms and tones is really good. But literally any words that you don't have, and multiple languages are good. That's also one of the problems we've had for many Americans, dual language. Some families have decided only to talk English. And because of that, kids get half as many words. Hmm. Because they get half as many words, they get less neuron connections. And the kids would be far better off if they spoke only Spanish. They'd be far better off if they spoke both languages. But what they need to do is hear a lot of words.
Well, our guest is George Halverson. He is the author of Three Key Years, and he'll be speaking next Thursday at the University Club in downtown Tampa as part of an event organized by Champions for Children. We're talking about the importance of early learning. So is there a way to measure the number of neuron connections that have been developed by the age of three? Scientists can't go into the brain and measure or look at it, or how do they determine that, you know, your neuron connections are pretty healthy?
Well, there's actually some really fascinating computer scan programs. University of Seattle has them, Harvard has them, and they actually do look at the kids' brains and again get a sense of the activity levels in the brains. But you don't need to scan the kids' brain to know that. What you need to know is, when they are three, do they know words? When they're three, are they speaking? When they're three, are they interacting? And because the kids who are interacting at that point and who have a vocabulary, at one end of the continuum, we've got a lot of kids only have like 400 words in their vocabulary. Other kids have 4,000 to 10,000. The kids who have more words end up doing far, far better in school, and they stay on that track. And the ones who know very few words.
George, did we lose you? I hope we didn't.
We're back. I'm back.
Okay, there you go.
For a second there, yep.
But the more words the kids know, the better their chances of succeeding academically through grade school, high school, and college.
Yes, the more words the kids know, the better. Early on, it's not totally important to have many words that first year. Just having the neuron connections is really positive. Just any connection is really positive. And then after that, it's good to have books in that add additional language so to make the language richer. So by age three, you actually get one kind of a rich set of words.
All right. So what's the lesson here for parents that might have two jobs and they don't see their kids much during the day? Maybe they have to put the kids in daycare. Maybe the kids are in what we call over here a VPK program. But what's the lesson for, parents and the kind of daycare they should look for, the kind of VPK program that they should look for?
Well, that's a really good point. The parents should look for books. Parents should look to make sure that the daycare actually has books and has reading for kids. When we looked at California, over half the daycares didn't have a single book. The other half had multiple books and read to the kids. And we really, really need to, when the parents look in a daycare, they should talk to the teachers and make sure that they're going to be talking to their kid and not just putting the kid off in a corner and leaving them alone, because they need that interaction, need the dialogue. And then having books is really important.
And so the same would be true at home. If you walk into a home and you saw no books there and you saw a child who was 1 year old, you might think, oh, maybe this child isn't going to succeed as well as a child who lives in a home where there's lots of books and those books are being used.
Yeah, I guarantee that. They've done multiple studies counting the number of books in the homes, and the kids with fewer books in the homes really do end up doing much less well. in the schooling. So, but what you can do when you go to a home that doesn't have books is bring them books.
Yeah. George,
many people have a ton of books of their own from their own kids that the kids love. And those families who have books that the kids love should think about ways of getting those books to other families so they can be loved again.
George, I know you got to go. The book is Three Key Years. I just want to ask one more question, and that is television, digital media, cell phones, computers. Are they a substitute? Do they help build neurons? If you plop your kid down in front of a television, or you let your kid play on your cell phone, is that a substitute?
No, that is a wonderful, wonderful question. It's really important. A lot of people are confused in that. The studies have shown absolutely when they're doing the scans of the brain that the parts of the brain that light up, that grow, do not light up watching the screen. They do not light up. They need an interaction with a human being. When we interact with a person, that part of the brain lights up and grows. But if we just watch a television, there's actually evidence that there's a regression. And so it's now on the other end of the continuum. If you're sitting in your parent's lap and you and your parent are looking at a screen together, I think you can get a different interaction, because then you get the parent-growth interaction and also the screen. But the screen alone, there's several studies now showing that that is actually sets the kids back. The more screen time they have, just screen time, you can set them back. And it's really important to have at least 30 minutes a day of loving interaction for each child. So if you can do nothing else than stop by a friend's house who's got a kid who's really tired and worn out or whatever, it doesn't give that child, as a trusted, loving adult, 30 minutes of interaction every day. You can actually change life trajectory. You can make a difference in life, because that is the point when the neurons are connecting, the security levels are building, and the kids need that interaction. And UC Davis did some magnificent work on toxic stress and showed that toxic stress can be reduced almost entirely if the kids get at least 30 minutes a day of loving, positive interaction. And it seems like a small number, but their studies show us that much changes the brain chemistry enough to mitigate the toxicity of the stress. And so we need that loving interaction. The brains of these children are magnificent. They're wonderful. They're really high potential. And we're not realizing the potential of our kids anywhere near as much as we can and should. And so the opportunity, and I really salute people for doing what they're doing. This is just very wonderful to have community leaders taking this on, because this will change the generation of kids born there.
All right. Well, George Halverson, thanks a lot. It's an honor to have you on WMNF. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Great to talk to you. That's George Halverson, who is the author of the book, Three Key Years, Talk, Read, Play, Sing, to Support and Help Every Child in America. He is the former CEO of Kaiser Permanente, and he'll be speaking next Thursday at 12 noon at the University Club in downtown Tampa. And that event is sponsored in part by a group called Champions for Children. And we're joined now by Liz Kennedy, who is the community liaison for Champions for Children. That group is hosting George in Tampa next week. And Liz, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, Rob, thank you so much for having George. We are very excited about his coming to Tampa and sharing his experience and messages. And Champions for Children is formerly the Child Abuse Council, and we have over the past 42 years kind of veered very much towards prevention and early childhood. So when we discovered Talking is Teaching, Talk, Read, Sing as a national initiative, we knew that we wanted to be part of it. And the reason is, not only does talking, reading, singing, and holding and nurturing your child enable the brain connections, from our point of view, anything that promotes attachment also promotes protection. So there are many, many payoffs from talking, reading, and singing with your very young child from the moment of birth. What I think George has opened our eyes to, as has the research that's been done around the country, is babies' brains learn from the moment of birth. They've got, you know, pictures of the brainwaves just connecting. And part of it is also just looking the child in the eye, eye contact, smiling at your child. In fact, I think there's an article in today's Wall Street Journal. I heard George say, you can read anything to your child. It can be the Wall Street Journal. It can be your favorite book. It can be a child's book. It can be in any language. The child needs to hear words. But when the child hears words and someone talking and looking at them, that promotes all this brain explosion and an attachment. It's that serve and return, where you say something, it doesn't even need to make a whole lot of sense. It just needs to be talking. That's why nursery rhymes that we all used to hear are so important. The baby needs to hear the words, see your eyes, see your smile, and then you kind of wait to see what the baby's going to say. And even the cooing and gurgling or giggling and smiling, all of that is that interaction that builds attachment, that builds the brain. And so we are so excited to have George come to Tampa. And I need to make a little correction that he will be talking on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock at the Children's Board, our Children's Board of Hillsborough County, not the University Club. It will be the Children's Board of Hillsborough County on Palm Avenue from 9 to 11 o'clock. It's a community conversation. There'll be a chance for people, parents, whoever in Tampa to come here. George, and also Champions for Children's Executive Director Amy Hale. They're going to do a real back-and-forth dialogue like you do on the phone, but they'll be at the Children's Board in their main meeting room. And so love to have people come Thursday morning, October 17th, 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock at the Children's Board of Hillsborough County. And I'll be glad to answer any of your questions because we're poised to launch a huge community initiative to get the messages of talking is teaching, talk, read, sing out to the entire community. So ask me whatever.
Okay.
Liz, I hope I have some answers.
Okay. And everybody's welcome to this event next Thursday at the Children's Board.
Is open to everybody at 9 o'clock at the Children's Board, particularly if you have an interest in services to families with very young children and you're involved, whether it's in an actual organization like Champions for Children or Healthy Start, or maybe you run a family child care home or you have a preschool, or you just are interested in getting the word out to everybody in the community that we need to be supporting early childhood services and resources and encouraging parents to talk to their babies, to interact, to nurture them, to love them. What George was referring to were those what they're called adverse childhood experiences. He talked about that negative residue for a child when he or she does not get the proper nurturing and interaction, that the brain simply doesn't develop, and the child's emotional trajectory is very skewed because he's been exposed to a violent, even loud atmosphere. And of course, one of the things we wrestle with in Hillsborough County is we have the highest rate of child abuse and neglect in the state, and we have too many babies, one and under, who have to be removed from their parents because of abuse or neglect. And this is a distressing data, you know.
Well, does having that interaction with kids, as you and George have been suggesting, does that tend to lessen the instances of child abuse? Is that what the studies show?
That's exactly. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We love that it builds the brain and children will be ready to learn in school, but we also really want parents to attach and nurture their children. And almost all of Champions programs are centered on, from prenatally up to age five, encouraging this attachment. Because if you are, and I don't know if you have children, but...
Oh, yeah, I got two,
Yep. If you love and are attached to your child, you will do anything to protect them. Whether, you know, and the incidence of abuse is much reduced because they won't hurt the child. It's that, you know, it's attached. And, of course, much of what we do, and we work with organizations like Healthy Start, where it's all about safe baby. And you know, for instance, you never, ever shake a baby out of anger. That's severe damage, you know. So if we can reach parents of infants, even prenatally, Champions has a great program, Baby University, and that's for pregnant and expecting parents, and they learn about how to react to a baby's crying, that you don't get frustrated and ever shake a baby. It's things like that that really, by reaching parents with babies as early as possible, it's just a win-win-win all the way across. School readiness, child abuse prevention, rich and strong families as far as relationships go, emotional stability. It's very excited about having a chance to bring George to town and help us launch our Talking is Teaching community campaign. And we're going to get the word out to everyone.
Well, Liz Kennedy is our guest, and she's with the group Champions for Children, and she and several other groups are bringing George Halverson to speak next Thursday at 9 a.m. at the Children's Board right there on Palm Avenue in Ybor City in Tampa. Liz, so many parents, and I talked to George about this a moment ago, so many parents are working two jobs. They don't have a lot of time with their kids. And I imagine, too, that the word... With so many people being low income and forced to work two jobs, that the word is, it's hard to get this word out.
Well, we've addressed that. We are going to be working with the Early Learning Coalition, which does the school readiness vouchers for all the preschools, children who qualify. We're working with preschools, and we're working with family child care homes. You're absolutely right. Many young children and infants spend more time in a child care setting than they do with their parents. And it's not because the parents don't want to be with their children. It's that safe and high-quality preschool and child care is so important. So you really need to reach both parents and other caregivers who spend hours with the children. I mean, what you don't want is a preschool that sets a bunch of children in front of a TV. There is no substitute. Part of yours and George's conversation was, you know, there is no substitute for direct talk and interaction, smiling face, and warm touch between an individual and the infant. All this screen time and these, you know, cell phones, and you see little two-year-olds and one-year-olds flipping through. You know, they're probably smarter than I am on a cell phone. And, you know, but that's, there's no human relationship there. You're talking to a thing. You're looking at a thing's picture. There's no mom, dad, or preschool teacher looking you straight in the eye and just saying anything. And I think another thing that George mentioned is, talking is teaching, talk, read, sing encourages parents to talk in their home language. It's the brain reacts to language and words, not just English. And, you know, the bazillion of people that are born around the world, their brain's development, and they're not all getting spoken English to as infants. It's talking, and it's the interaction. It's the serve and return. It's all the things that you probably did with your children and never knew what a good job you were doing.
Well, I think one of the best parts about it is that I love music, and my wife loved music too, and so we would sing in the car. At least I would sing in the car with the kids as I was taking them to to daycare or wherever I was taking the kids. So, let's take a few phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. But the thing about a lot of parents have to take their kids to daycare because they have jobs. Usually, you know, sometimes both parents work or sometimes it's the sole provider, but they've got to work. They got to be gone at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m.
Right.
So how are you getting the word out to the daycare centers that this is important, that you just shouldn't warehouse the kids and put them in a crib, but, you know, put them on your lap and read them a book?
Right. We're going to be doing a lot of trusted messenger training. One of the elements of the Talking is Teaching, Talk, Read, Sing National Initiative is that you train trusted messengers. We want to get to parents where parents are, but we also know that teachers, daycare center providers, they need to get the message. So we will be doing trusted messenger training. Champions for Children has a big program, Parents as Teachers. We have done it for 20 years, you know. And we do have two healthy families teams. Talking is Teaching, Talk, Read, Sing is an overlay to much of the work that home visitors already do, that we could train preschool and home family child care home providers to do. Just, it's very natural. It's not even a curriculum, it's a way of interacting with infants and very young children that builds emotional security and brain development, language acquisition. And we're going to be doing that with trainings and also with posters and prompts throughout the community. Put those, what we'd love to do is get some wraps on some city buses so that it just the message gets out. The other element of our campaign will be a public awareness campaign, talking to people like you, getting hopefully some billboards and putting prompts in places like laundromats where families gather. And we have a whole plan of doing what's called an air campaign, a community awareness campaign, and a implementation via trusted messengers who will help parents and work with other caregivers to get the talk, read, sing message out. We also partner with folks like Best the Book Bus and others that getting books in the home. But even if someone can't read that well, like you said, you sang on the way to wherever
we were going, yeah, the grocery store.
I was just
the grocery
hearing
store.
Your voice, hearing it, you could sing, you know, whatever you wanted. All of that gets absorbed in. And if a parent can't read real well, they can look at a picture book and make up the story. You know, it's hearing words in the right, warm, and engaging tone of voice.
Yeah.
All of that is...
Well, Liz, let's take a few phone calls, Liz Kennedy is with us. She's with the group Champions for Children right here in Tampa, and we're talking about the speech that George Halverson is going to give next Thursday at 9 a.m. at the Children's Board in Ybor City. Let's go to Jim in St. Petersburg, who has a developmental question. Jim, what's your question?
One of my daughters has taken custody of at the time, an eight-month-old kid who's now 13 months old. The kid was in a not-that-great environment to begin with and has been in a really good environment since she got to my daughter's place. I caught some of the earlier thing. This kid talks or speaks words. She, of course, jibber-jabbers around, but she speaks words and she repeats phrases. So my question is, when does this negative effect take effect? Is it after 3 months or is it after, you know, can you overcome it if you get them at 8 months? Can you overcome any negativity that they previously experienced?
Yeah. Can I answer that?
Yeah, please do, Liz. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. First of all, thank your daughter for taking in a baby. And yes. You can overcome it. Unfortunately, sometimes if the damage is too severe, there could be some they're called ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. You've heard probably of fetal alcohol syndrome and something. There can be. But I will tell you, you can quickly make up time. The sooner we intervene with a child who is in an unsafe or unhealthy environment and place them with someone like your daughter who is talking, nurturing them, all of that counts tremendously. Oh, it counts tremendously. We wish there was no need for this, but please encourage your daughter to just keep doing what she's doing, because it will offset the adverse experience that you may have. And the reason in with children is there is always hope there. There's always hope.
Hey, Jim, we're going to drop you off just because we got a bad line. But, Jim, thanks, and thanks for what your daughter is doing.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jim, and there is hope. And let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, a few points you disagree with. What would you like to say, Gino?
Oh, well, first, yeah, I would like to say that I did agree with, you know, the earlier you teach your child, I think the more successful that they could be or can be. But the statement about the African Americans in prison, you're assuming that they can't read, so that has, exacerbated the fact that they are in prison, or send them to prison to help them, which is not true at all. I worked at four different prisons for 10 years. There are thousands, tens of thousands of blacks that can read. I would say that the reason that they are in prison is because of historically America. That sends blacks to prison on a faster rate than they do the white counterparts for doing some of the same crimes or no crime at all. And I'm for sure, I know that for a fact. So it's not because they can't read, for some that are there that they can't read. There are many out there. Yeah, I'm not going to say tens of thousands, because like I said, I worked in four different prisons in Florida.
Yeah, and Gino, I don't think our guest was trying to deny that there's racism in society. I have seen statistics, and this doesn't have to do with the African American community, but I've seen statistics that say that if you don't graduate from high school, there's a huge chance that you're going to end up in the criminal justice system, and it goes across all ethnic groups. But I, you know, our guest isn't here, so I, you know, I'm not trying to speak for him. But anyway, I've seen that statistic, and I'm pretty confident in that one. That if you have a hard time graduating from high school, and one of the things that would indicate that you would have a hard time graduating from high school is that you can't read. Now, I'm not attributing this to any ethnic group. Sure. I'm just saying what we got to do is help people read. You know,
sure, and I agree with that. But what happened to what was going on in the 20s and the 30s when they couldn't read or coming out of, you know, come out, and that the prison rate was lower then? What would be?
Yeah, I think African Americans were still imprisoned at a high rate even back then. But Gino, thanks a lot. We should discuss prison reform, and I promise we'll do it.
Okay,
all right, thanks. Gino, thank you. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. We've just got a few more minutes. Liz, before we go back to the phones, how can people find out more about the George Halverson speech?
They can write me online. My email at Champions is lkennedy@cfctb.org, and we can register them. We've got capacity at the Children's Board for about 130 people. And we're pretty, you know, we're climbing up there. So it would pay to register. And, you know, even our phone number is 813-673-4646. But anyway, shoot me an email, lkennedy@cfctb.org, and I'll make sure you get registered for the community conversation. And just one last comment based on your caller who just called it. All babies are born with the same capacity to learn and to have wonderful lives ahead. Babies are babies are babies, and that's one of the premises that Champions has had, that every baby, every family deserves the very best. And if you read George's books, he really points out there are no biological difference, that, you know, race is just a construct that we have put on. Babies are babies are babies. So you can talk to them, read to them, sing to them in any language. It's just a matter of nurturing and loving and protecting them.
All right. Let's see if we can squeeze in at least one more phone call. Let's go to Connie. Sure. Connie in Valrico. Hi, Connie. What's your question?
Well, I'm kind of making a comment. Things I've observed. I see parents anymore, you know, pushing their stroller and they're talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, in my day, you'd be pushing the kid in the stroller and you'd say, look at the birdie, look at the doggie, and you would talk to them. And the other things I see at Busch Gardens, they're handing their kids their little phones and they're playing games. And I'm like, you pay for Busch Gardens and you're not showing them, you know, the elephant.
Yeah, it seems pretty odd, doesn't it? Yeah. All right, Connie, that's a great point. That's a great point, Connie. Thank you for making it. And Liz, I think you would tell that parent to put down the phone and talk to your baby as you're strolling.
We just saw that on our morning walk this morning. The baby, the previous caller said, the baby was in the stroller just looking up, looking at the father, and the father was looking at his phone. I mean, talk about the perfect moment. If he'd put the phone down and looked at that baby, which is what we all used to do, and say, you know, look at the trees, look at the birds. And it was my husband and I were just struck by exactly what your previous caller said. You would talk to, look at the giraffe at the zoo. It's amazing. I think that they're finding the reading scores that came out on the front page of the Times just a few days ago, how even in high school where kids are not reading as well, that's because they don't read books anymore. They don't hear words anymore. They look at these devices.
Well, Liz, thank you so much. We're out of time. I wish we had more time. Liz Kennedy from Champions for Children right here in Tampa, and she's at lkennedy@cfctb.org. Liz, thank you so much. And George will be speaking next Thursday at there at the Children's Board.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Liz. Good to talk to you. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. And if you haven't yet made a contribution to WMNF this year, we hope you will. Keep this radio station alive. It has unique programming, and we hope that you enjoy it. And if you do, please make a contribution at WMNF.org. That's WMNF.org, and there's a little red button in the center of the page that says Give Here. And that's how we stay on the air. We are a listener-supported radio station. Thanks to Bill Grace. He's been our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lurie. This is WMNF in Tampa. And coming up in the next hour, we're going to hear that great talk from Caroline Fredrickson from the American Constitution Society about redistricting and taking back